Welcome to DRS Open. I know it's been a long time, but we're finally back. So welcome, guys. We missed you. Hi, Langa.
Hello, Wame. How are you, my friend?
I'm not good, but how are you?
No, I can't complain. Like you said, it's been a while since we've chatted and recorded a podcast. But, you know, you and I have chatted in the past month or so about all things Formula One and even not Formula One. So I'm okay. It's been quite a journey.
I think I had to heal more than anything. You know, I had to mourn, heal, and get myself together so I can at least record a full episode without breaking down, because what happened in Abu Dhabi was the worst thing that ever happened to me last year.
And you're right. And the thing is, we're all going through this, and Formula One fans are experiencing this moment in different ways. And I think if I could say anything, like also just to our listeners, is that, you know, so many people on the internet are telling people to just get over it, or they're telling people, you know, like move on. And that's not right. We're all individuals. The sport means many things to all of us. And some of them really, really deeply profound. And take your time. You deserve every moment that you take in order to process what has happened, process your feelings, and you know, you're under no one's clock to heal, get over this.
And whatever you're feeling, your feelings are valid. Some days it's great, you're feeling like you're over it, but then you wake up and you still get very angry when you see clips of Abu Dhabi on the timeline. But I think more than anything, the fan base that's suffering the most is Team LH, because what we saw in Abu Dhabi was a blatant disregard of the rules. They compromised their own integrity, and I also can't find enough English words to explain exactly what happened in Abu Dhabi. That's how angry I still am.
Yeah, I think you're right. It was a flagrant disregard of the rules, and you know, all in the name of entertainment. Like you and I have joked. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I wanted to say that it, like, the very last lap of Abu Dhabi ruined the whole race, because more than anything, it was a really, really good race, and then it just all came down to that last lap. Or the last few laps, actually, that ruined everything. And it took just 2 minutes to ruin what the FIA had built all these years.
It's crazy when you think about it like that. You know, sometimes we hear that phrase in life that, you know, it takes forever to build a reputation, but you can destroy it in a moment. And that's, I think you're right. It was everything, all the goodwill that the sport has gained was destroyed in 5 laps. When was the safety car come out? Lap 54, 57? Of 57?
57.
Yeah.
Of course you don't remember.
I think
you
have five. No, listen. I guess we're here already. Like, you know, my experience of that, you know, in the moment, I was just like, get that safety car. Let's get a lap of racing. Besides the fact that I'd had a few beers even before the race and I was quite upset, I think the last glimmer of hope I had was when Max put on his second set of hard tires. And it was a glimmer of hope, but we were hoping that, you know, he could do the reverse of what Hamilton did to him at Barcelona, right? But that didn't happen. And so I was completely shot. And my experience in the moment was sheer jubilation. It was only really in the moments after the race where I realized the enormity of what had actually happened. But like you said, Team LH didn't have the same experience.
You know what's funny is that from the very first lap, we all had hope. I even knew that we were going to win. Even after like the pit stops and everything, I was like, okay, fine, Lewis has this. Even after Max pitted for the soft, I was like, no, Lewis has this. We're only left with like 5 laps. Max had had 16 seconds. No, it was 11 seconds. Max had 11 seconds and a few left cars to get to Lewis. And I was like, no, man, there's no way this man is getting, there's no way this man is catching Lewis and we're winning this, right? And then after that crash, I was like, no, this safety car is going to take us to the last lap and we're not going to get a lap of racing because it's impossible. Because as you even look back at the clips, you can see that the marshals were still on track even after those 5 cars had unlapped themselves, you know?
Yeah. No, it's crazy. Again, I think, and I love how you summed it up that we all had hope. And you're talking about the different hopes that people had at different points. I think, you know, at the start of the race for a Red Bull and Verstappen fan, you know, he was on the better tire on the clean side of the track and, you know, not for the first time this season, got an absolutely dreadful start. Something that's really plagued this season. You know, he was able to recover that in France. He was able to recover it in USA, but this was a bridge too far. He needed to be in the front of the race to try and control the race. That was the only opportunity that Red Bull would have to win this race. And he blew it on the first lap before the first turner. But anyway.
But that start from Lewis was perfect. It was like there was no flaws. By the time they reached the first corner, I think Lewis was a second ahead.
It was insane. I mean, I'm sure someone will jog my memory, but I don't really remember many overtakes into turn one off the line at Abu Dhabi. Lewis was way ahead, like when they were halfway there. I don't know the distance from the start line to the first corner, but by half of that distance, Lewis was way ahead. It was ridiculous. Max needs to work on his starts. It's actually unacceptable at the moment.
We saw it in Saudi. I hope he doesn't.
USA. Yeah, no, it does. But I mean, you know, how was your experience of the race? And, you know, I think for a lot of people, we've actually forgotten really what happened in that race. Is it even important?
I don't even think I remember what happened during that race. I remember the first lap and the last few laps. But also, a lot has been said about Abu Dhabi. I feel like we've been talking about it for months now. No, it's not months, for weeks, because it was just a month on Tuesday. It was on the 12th. But yeah, basically what happened was a disregard of the rules. I hope nothing like that ever happens. And I'm not one to stand for people to get fired or like a dismissal of that, but Michael Masi has to go, and I don't have a solution as to how this thing can be stopped from happening again, but I just know that Michael Masi has to go. And in terms of like everything, I think in all of this, we keep forgetting that it happened to us, like we experienced it as Team LH and it hurt, but the most important person that is probably still devastated by this is Lewis, and I'm so sorry that the sport that he did, like that he, oh my god, yeah. Anyways, I'm sorry, Lewis. He did not deserve any of that. After all your hard work, you really just did not deserve that.
It's one of those really difficult moments. You and I have spoken before. You know, you mentioned Michael Masi has to lose his job. And I think that's a minimum requirement. And I know that we had some chats, you know, privately before we even thought of this podcast. And I mentioned that the difficult thing about the race director, and this is in no way an excuse for Abu Dhabi before, you know, I want to be understood clearly there, is that race directors, it's a role that where experience counts. And this is now the third year of Masi being a race director, which on one hand is some time, but on another hand, in the greater scheme of things, might not actually be that much. Charlie Whiting, you know, his predecessor had, you know, an innumerable number of years. And I don't actually know, I don't have the encyclopedic knowledge to be like, what was he like at his beginning of his career? But the one thing that I had said even before Abu Dhabi was that he needs help. Charlie Whiting was known to have a couple of guys who would sort of intercept messages. from whoever it was coming from. And, you know, so Charlie Whiting would only have to really focus on like big decisions that needed him. And I believe that Michael Massey didn't have that sort of support. And I believe that whether it's Michael Massey or his likely successor, that needs to happen. There's not just one firing and hiring of a person that's going to eliminate inconsistencies and bad decisions in Formula One. There's a proper structural reform that needs to happen in the office of the race director that I hope that the removal, or what feels to me like an inevitable removal of Michael Massey, we shouldn't get duped into thinking that that would solve everything.
But you know what I think? Whoever is Michael Massey's successor will know that following the rules preserves the integrity of the sport. And whoever is his successor will understand the importance of rules and will have to apply them exactly as they're written. No red tape, nothing, just the rules, just the blatant rules like that. Because Michael Massey's problem was also like inconsistencies. For example, I hate bringing this up because I've been telling people more or less to move on from this. But Silverstone, the penalty that was given in Silverstone had said what had to happen if those two crashed again. I mean, look at Monza. We could say that it was a racing incident. We can say that Max was more at fault. But then in Michael Massey's eyes, he had to give a penalty for that. There was no way that he could say that, no, there was no way that he could flag that as a racing incident, because more than anything, he had punished Silverstone, so he had to also punish Monza. So what I'm actually saying here is that some of his decision-making set the tone for the next decisions, you know. After crashes, he definitely had to give penalties sometimes.
I fully agree. And it's ironic because I said, you know, race directors need experience, but it seemed like he was weighed down by the weight of experience. You know, another example is that, as people have, I think, rightly pointed out, if he had given a penalty to Max at Brazil for that running Lewis wide at whichever corner it was, then ironically, he would probably have been able to, or the stewards. And I think sometimes I make the same mistake as well. Sometimes we do confuse stewards' decisions versus the race director, and those are often not the same thing. But if the general idea being that if Max had been punished in Brazil, Lewis ironically would probably have been punished in Abu Dhabi. Probably, again, I'm not trying to get into the debate on the actual merits, but again, this whole idea, and I'm agreeing with you that the FIA is weighed down, it seemed, by its previous decisions. And the last thing I'll say very briefly, you know, one thing that Charlie Whiting was very good at was calling the drivers around and saying, you know what, we made a decision in XYZ race and we've had some time to think about it. It might have been wrong and we will not allow that to happen going forward again. Michael Massey's problem is that he seems to double down on decisions and he seems unable to admit when he's wrong. I think, again, he was scared that, you know, if and I'm just using this as an example, of punishing Lewis for the, was it turn 5 incident at Abu Dhabi because he hadn't punished Max. Whereas if he had, in the first instance, admitted to a mistake in not punishing Max at Brazil, he could have punished Lewis and people would have been like, okay, well, at least it's consistent in the sense that not in terms of the decisions that were applied, but because we have a consistency in knowing what the rules are and how the race should be stewarded.
You know what was actually shocking was that brake testing that happened in Saudi. Was it? No. Yes, it wasn't Jeddah. Yes,
Saudi.
But I think we covered that on our list on our last episode. And yeah, so basically, what Abu Dhabi did, Abu Dhabi ruined the sport for others, and for some of us, we're still in a love-hate relationship with the sport. But what I would like for like everything to happen is that I need to see change for me to believe in the sport again. And I think for Lewis as well, to for him to come back and fight for that eighth, you know, I think more than anything, he needs to be certain that rules will be applied and that like he just needs like to trust him, because I don't think he trusts the FIA as he shouldn't. But if he does want to come back, I think more than anything, he needs reassurance that the rules will be applied and that none of what happened in Abu Dhabi will happen again. But then again, as a Lewis fan girl, I hope Lewis makes the best decision for himself. And whatever decision that he will make, I will support it, because he has given his life to the sport. And if he feels like it's enough for him, then I will also support it, because we know that he's been put through the ringer for the past like 14 years of him racing. So yeah, I just hope he's taking this break to just reflect on everything and make the best decision for himself. But I really miss him.
Absolutely. Shame. I can hear it in your voice. And I agree. And I don't think you have to be a Lewis Hamilton fan to agree with what you're saying. You just simply have to be a human being with emotions. When you know his story, and anyone who's performing at this level has some sort of story. You know, we can talk about and mock the money that the Mazepins have, but you know, Nikita must have done some work, right? Some have to work more than others, absolutely. But no one is there just because of the money, although definitely the money gives people a leg up. But anyway, if you understand Lewis's story on a purely human level, you know, you have to empathize with how much he's given, how much he's given to the sport, the profile he's created for the sport, the level of celebrity. He's made it cool. He's made it one of the most talked about sports in the world. And he deserves to have the respect of us as fans of motorsport fans of Formula One and Team LH, that whatever decision he makes, you know, will be taken and respected fully. And I think, and his absence is certainly felt. It's actually quite interesting watching how the wider Formula One community has been able to focus on the issues at hand regarding, you know, governance in the sport. Whilst he's following zero people on Instagram, at least the last that I checked.
But I
follow Lewis Hamilton. But this is what people don't understand. I don't even follow Max Verstappen. I support the kid. I don't follow him on social media. I admire his skill and I admire him as a human being. I think, you know, there was a really great podcast earlier this year. Oh, no, wow. Earlier in 2021. I forget the name of the podcast now, but it was basically the Braxley crew. And something that they were speaking about was how Lewis Hamilton the Lewis Hamilton that walked into the door at Mercedes is very different to the Lewis Hamilton that's there today. Now, of course, this is 9 years later. 9 years of growth as a human being is one thing, but I do get the sense, and they intimated it a number of times in the conversation with guys like Allison, Vowles were in the conversation. They were saying things like, you know, how much of a team player he is. I think he was quite, and understandably so, quite self-interested when he left McLaren and he joined Mercedes, but he's such a team player. And I think it adds a layer of complexity to his decision. I would imagine wherever Lewis Hamilton is that he might feel that even if he wants to quit, he may feel rightly
like
or wrongly.
Getting people and, down.
Yeah. And I think that really sucks because I hope that he doesn't let that factor into his decision because he's given so much. And sometimes when you're the type of person who gives and gives and gives and gives, you can lose sight of the ability to receive and to receive kindness and to receive understanding and to receive people's respect. And I hope that with whatever counsel and however he's thinking, Lewis Hamilton, that he's able to receive the good things that he has so much given out to the sport and to society at large. I think, yeah, it's the least that he deserves.
Yep, and I would like to actually give a special shout out to Team LH for what they've done for him in the past few weeks. They've stood up for him, they've spoken up against the injustice that he faced. There's even initiatives. If you're very interested in wanting to know what Team LH is doing, you can visit the 44 Twitter page, and it's also a blog, but it's mostly active on Twitter, where you can see like the types of the many steps to take in just helping Lewis, or like making him feel like he's heard. And in him coming back, I hope he knows that he has nothing to prove. He has proven everything that he needed to prove way before 2021, and I hope he knows that if he comes back, he'll just be fighting for the eighth and proving nothing to no one. Most importantly, he does not need to prove anything to Michael Masi. He does not need to prove anything to Max. He just doesn't need to prove anything to anyone. Lewis will just be doing this to race and do something that he loves. But anyways, guys, I don't want us to dwell into Abu Dhabi, basically what this episode is about. We're just going to look back on the season that we had. It's been a very, very, very long and chaotic, and actually a good race, a good season of racing. So that's what we're going to focus on. Abu Dhabi broke all of our hearts, but I would just like all of us to just take a look back into like what happened in the last season and what we're looking forward to in 2022.
Yeah, that's amazing. And your words are important. And I would also add something that really moved me. Maybe preaching to the converted here, but when you have a chance, read the Hamilton Commission, or the Hamilton Report, born of the Hamilton Commission, about how transformation can happen within the realm of Formula One. I think it's so crucial. And I read it in one night, at least the first time that I read it. Its recommendations are, what are you laughing at? There are no allegations here, right?
I didn't say anything.
it's an eye opening. It's an eye opening report about how we can achieve transformation in Formula One. But I think you can translate so many of the ideas to your own workplaces. You can translate so many of the ideas to society at large. It's just so important. And and again, another stamp of approval of the measure of a measure of the man. Some amazing stuff out there. But you know, you did mention that you would like to chat about the season, maybe not quite a review, but something a little bit more lighthearted. But I wanted to actually ask you, you know, we've had, you know, a bit of a low moment to end the season, but it was a remarkable season. What were your favorite races of the season? Which moments were memorable for you this 2021 season?
The British GP has to be one of my very favorite races. No, actually, Brazil and are my standouts. Yeah. Those are my two favorite races. But if we were to count them up to three, I think Brazil is number one. The British GP is number two, and Russia Sochi is number three because of like that 100 win.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, those were all fantastic races. I think Brazil will be spoken about. I will probably be telling my children about Lewis's drive at Brazil 2021.
Russia was just such an emotional. Lewis?
Because it was an incredible drive. I mean, you know, we laugh about it now, but like, I mean, he won that race from 10th. You know, the interesting thing about Brazil, and I was thinking about this, is that, you know how you have high downforce circuits, right? Where a team will simply just, they know before they arrive on the weekend that we're going to put on maximum downforce. I'm talking circuits like Monaco, Hungary, with maximum downforce circuits because of the number of slow speed corners there are. The other end of the spectrum is the low downforce circuits, where you just know that before you've arrived there, that you're running the lowest downforce, your thinnest wing possible. Monza is the preeminent example of that. So a lot of courses lie, you know, on some sort of spectrum on that extreme. The interesting thing about Brazil is that there are so many different setups. Low downforce cars have won at Brazil before. High downforce cars have won at Brazil. You know, sort of medium downforce setups. You know, the order of the field can change, you know, just because of wet conditions. It's one of those amazing tracks that just has incredible balance. And what that allows teams to do is to not set up for the track, but to set up their car for its optimal performance, because you're never going to really gain or lose too much in particular sectors of a track that, you know, that it starts to influence your downforce set, your overall race setup, of which downforce is an important part. And Lewis starts at 10th, and Max started second, but was in the lead of the race by the first corner. Red Bull would have set up their car for its maximum performance, right? Yeah. Like, it's not as if they were sitting there at a setup disadvantage, given everything that I've just explained about the way that cars or teams set up their cars, and Lewis absolutely sailed past him. I mean, that's crazy. From 10th, like
that weekend was perfect from quali to the race, because you look at quali, before he was even disqualified for that slight mistake that wasn't his fault. Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm not even going to get into that. But yeah, that
the FIA was absolutely correct. Yeah.
That quali lap that he put in was perfect. There was no flaws. And then you go into the sprint race where he was the last, and then he finished 10th in just 27 laps. No, was it 25? I think it was
27 laps, but he finished 5th, but he got a 5-place grid penalty.
Oh,
remember? So he had a 10-place grid penalty. I think for an engine or something like that. I don't know. I can't remember exactly how it happened.
He got a new eyes.
Yeah, so he went from 20th to 5th in just 27 laps, and then he went from 10th to 1st in 50-odd laps. Incredible.
I'm actually embarrassed that you know more about Brazil than I do, and that was just, like, it was a team LH.
No, you were just drinking. Drinking the drink. No, sorry. I stopped because I thought I was cutting you off, but you were drinking the champagne. You're more than welcome to not remember in granular detail, because I was sitting there stressed. I was a sitting duck for the whole race. I remember it very well.
I remember how to rewatch it, but I'll go back to it and rewatch it again, because I haven't been able to watch anything F1 in weeks. But you know what? That's fine. I have to go watch Brazil so that I can start talking about it again, because that weekend, that whole weekend, was just a flawless weekend for Lewis. And you know what? It's one of, I think it's top one, actually, historical F1 races, if we're being honest. And I'm not saying this because I'm a Lewis fan girl, but in terms of the racing as well, that was literally like top one historical races of F1.
I can't disagree with you. I think that, you know, if you... And again, we all have our different biases. There's so many different ways to look at a race, to look at a season. We enjoy different parts of the sport, and Brazil just had Brazil had everything. It was the pinnacle. It was the first weekend of those prayer spaces on Twitter, which I find hilarious. But you've got people praying in Portuguese. I've not been in one before the allegations coming in. But I was told.
By who? I don't remember us having this conversation.
I was told by Team LH, right? I put my hand across the river. Oh, guys, English is tough. But that was the start. I mean, if you remember the crowd, the tributes to Senna, the purple stuff.
Smoke, yeah.
That was smoke or flares or whatever I don't know what they were. It was magical. It was everything that we love about Formula One in a positive way. In a positive way. And you can't, we'll remember that.
And Lewis
yes, something that hasn't happened enough.
Yeah.
Absolutely, from those Twitter prayer spaces. But you guys, yeah.
You know, those spaces were started because we just wanted him to beat the allegations. We just didn't want him to get disqualified or anything. And then from there, I think people just collectively, or the Brazilians actually collectively decided that that was just what was going to happen every weekend. And I'm telling you right now, that was a cheat code, because we've been in all those spaces from Brazil until the very last day of the race. And yeah, it was also a way for Team Elliott to bond. I'm not going to lie. Like, it all brought us together and it was just very nice.
Absolutely. Ah, guys, enjoy it. And I was chatting with a few people. One thing that Formula One has been great at is creating communities that reach, you know, across nationalities, across genders. It's fantastic. I will never begrudge Team Elliott for that. Yeah.
Also, I think I'm just going to make my case for Silverstone as well, for it being number two. Besides all the controversy behind it, I think more than that, it was a race that gave also Team Elliott hope. Because remember, prior to Silverstone, Max had gone on a 5-week winning streak and everyone had just given up hope for the championship. Everyone was just like, nope, it's his. Lewis can't beat that. Lewis will never get back from that. And then we go into that weekend, the very first day, which is a sprint weekend. I think Lewis is king of the sprints, to be honest. I hate sprints, but I think Lewis is king of sprints. We went into that weekend when we got the quali. Quali was on Friday. I remember it was Friday night in South Africa. We watched that and Lewis put that car on pole. Even when he made a mistake, he still put it on pole. And we were all shocked. I'm going to tell you, I remember there was a tweet where someone was like, that quali lap, that Q3 lap, brought out all of Team Elliott from hiding. And I was like, you know what, that's true, because I was hiding that weekend. I was just like, if Mercedes doesn't give Lewis a winning car this weekend, I'm sorry, I'm never going to tweet about Formula One ever again. And you know what, Lewis came to save us.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it was the first weekend where the Red Bull, I mean, that I remember practice on the Friday afternoon, and it was the first weekend where the Red Bull's rear instability was starting to become an issue. I mean, Max had some incredible understeer, yet was able to put it, I think, was second. I don't know how, but Bottas must have had a nightmare somewhere along the line, because I remember thinking this is a clear Mercedes front row lockout. And Bottas put that car second.
Max was second, and then the sprint.
Yes,
the qualifying for the sprint, Lewis was first, Max was second, and Bottas was third. He went into the sprint, and then Max was first, Lewis was second, and Bottas was third.
Correct, yeah, absolutely. But again, I was just really happy that Max was able to split the Mercedes, because we were so far off the pace. We made some decent adjustments. That was another weekend, you know, we didn't finish the race. Checo was out the points. It was terrible. He had an unprovoked spin during the sprint race. It was ridiculous.
It was a Red Bull disaster class. And I'm sorry, but that weekend, that's why I keep saying that. That's why I think when you ask me which were like my top three favorite races, Silverstone is number one, because that weekend was a Red Bull disaster class and a Mercedes master class. That's why I loved it so much, because yeah.
But can't fight that.
Anyways, I forgot to ask you, like, what were your top three races?
Well, it's tough. I think I know if you're asking me what are the best races and, you know, what are my favorite races, I think my favorite race has to be Austin, United States. I think that was, I think it was an exhilarating race throughout the grid. And Max was able to hold off, you know, a surging Lewis Hamilton on tires that were 8, 9, perhaps 10. I don't think it was 10, but older. that was like, it felt like a coming of age moment for Max, for me, you know, and I think that was by far my favorite race of the season.
That was when he was able to preserve his tires, right? Everyone thought that he would eat his tires, and then he didn't.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, you and I have spoken, and many people have said it before, there's probably nothing more intimidating in Formula One than to have Lewis Hamilton chasing you down. And he had Lewis in his mirrors for a good 10, maybe 15 laps, and he managed that race to perfection. The traction that he would get out of turns 6, 7, 8 was phenomenal. And, you know, I think it couldn't have been better. I loved France as well, as the second race that I would say, simply because, much like United States, you know, but I think definitely in France, you know, the slower car won. And like, there's something magical about that when you get everything right in terms of you get your pit stops right, you get the strategy right, your teammate comes in and plays a role, as Checo Perez did. I mean, it was the first time as Red Bull where we actually heard Checo on the radio saying, you know, go get him. It was a sign that like things were really starting to come together at Red Bull, and it was such an important race. I remember Horner, who's not even my favorite person, but like, I think his comments were right at the time, which is that if you can beat Mercedes at France, you can pretty much beat them anywhere. And that just summed up the energy at Red Bull at that time of the season. It was crazy. And the third one, I guess, which I can't really, it's a toss-up. Monaco, because winning Monaco is important, is the honorable mention. But I think the third race was Mexico, because it was different to the other ones. But Mexico was the first time I started to believe you could win the championship. Ironically, you know, the next three or four, like at that stage, I really believed that Max would win in Brazil. And that would be the championship, even if I anticipated that Mercedes would win the last three races. That didn't turn out to be quite the case, but that was the first time. And I've watched Formula One for 20 years. I have never supported a world champion before. I supported Nico Rosberg, but like that was a... I was supporting Rosberg out of... Rosberg. But I was being different. Like, I can admit that, like, I didn't have the, like, there wasn't like an emotional connection to Rosberg. I was just being different. I had been supporting Rubens Barrichello since I started watching the sport. Barrichello quit. And it seemed stupid at the time for me. Like, I didn't like to be a quote unquote glory hunter. So I didn't want to support Alonso, who was already a 2-time world champion. Lewis was already a world champion at the time. Didn't actually like him at the time. Vettel had won 2 or 3 championships already. It seemed a bit silly. And then, you know, Michael Schumacher came back to Formula One, and he was at Mercedes, and it seemed right to support his teammate again, because I had supported Rubens Barrichello, you know, at Ferrari, in the heyday of Ferrari's winning world championships. I supported Rubens Barrichello right through until his retirement later on, even after he left Ferrari. So Rosberg just fitted. But with Max, it was different. Max was the first time in my life where I looked at a driver when he was young and I thought, he's the real deal. And I became emotionally invested in his success. So it felt like the first time. Even though I do remember Abu Dhabi 2016 and not being able to eat the burger that was in front of me because I thought that Rosberg was going to be forced into a crash by Hamilton holding him up. So, yeah, Mexico is the third favorite because notwithstanding everything that I've just said about, you know, Rosberg, like, I was invested. This was the first time I've watched the sport for 20 years that I was invested. And the guy that I was invested in could win a world championship. It was just a special moment, special feeling.
Of all the races you've mentioned, I remember those were like Mercedes strategy disaster classes. You said your favorite race was Austin, right? The first one was Austin. Yeah. I don't think we had suffered damage. The car had suffered damage. So no, that was not a disaster class. But France, oh my God. Oh my God. I remember I was just standing and I was shouting, like I was shouting at my TV, like I wanted to personally write a letter to James Valls. And then Mexico was more of Valtteri Bottas's, not going to say fault, but he left the door open for Max. And in doing that, he defended Lewis instead of defending Max. So that's how Max was able to get past the Mercedes. But anyways, Mexico was when everyone lost hope. And I remember I said that, guys, you guys can lose hope. It's fine. I will never lose hope in Lewis. And I just knew, like I've never, as much as I wanted to lose hope in all those races where we were just not doing what we were like used to like doing, right? Because I remember there was a point from Baku to Austria or France, where we didn't win, but I kept saying that, guys, Mercedes is quicking, Mercedes will come back, and which it did, and I was right. I mean, even the very last race of the season, the way it ended, Lewis won that race, and no one can ever tell me otherwise. When Lewis won that race, and it is what it is. But then I just never lost hope in Lewis ever. And I think that was the weekend where he uploaded a picture on Instagram, and then the caption, no, Instagram and Twitter, and the caption was, "It's not over yet." And I was like, "Of course it's not."
No, you're quite right. You know, I think what was interesting about Mexico is that a lot of people, and I've said this before, and I think it is true, that world champions don't typically win the championship in races where they're dominant. They win it in races where it's the points you pick up when you're not dominant. And it's easy to forget for a lot of people, but like that battle that Lewis had with Checo. If you're a Red Bull fan, you're going to say, you know, you could expect more from Checo. But I think Lewis drove out of his socks. I remember him getting out of that car and looking like he was going to faint. I don't know if he was ill or if he maybe didn't have enough water, but I was really worried about him after Mexico. Some people, depending on which corner of society or the media, were just like, oh, he looks like he's a broken man. And yes, he did. I don't think he was broken because he had stopped believing. I think he was under serious physical strain and duress at Mexico, and he still managed to keep that car P2 in front of Checo. And, you know, that's the type of things that the champions can do. And if he was going to win the championship, it was weekends like Mexico where the difference would have been made.
Okay, yeah, that's actually true. Are you sure you're not a Hamilton fan? Please think about this and then you get back to me.
Okay, well, you know what? Let's move on. What is your what is your worst race of the season? What is that race that made you think to yourself, ugh?
You know, I think everyone else would say like Baku, right, because of like that mistake. But oh my God, Monaco was the worst race of the season for me. Not because it was boring or anything, but I don't know what Mercedes was doing that weekend. It was a disaster class from the wrong car setup. Lewis was complaining about the setup from Friday. Yes. I really was complaining about it.
Yes.
And nothing changed. They got into Quali, still nothing changed. And then after Quali, the race was just a disaster. The pit stops were horrendous, to a point where we even got the longest pit stop of Formula One. I hate that. If you look it up, you'll see
still
that
they're still changing the tire.
it was that wheel that got stuck. Oh my God. But yeah, that race broke me. I remember I was just like, what is happening here? You know, I think that was the first weekend I stopped watching the podiums. Like, if Max was winning or whatever, I didn't watch the podium, to be honest. And that podium was the first one last season that didn't have any Mercedes driver on it. And
That's true. Oh, it was. Yeah, I it's weird that you said everyone expects Baku, because I was thinking, if I was a Mercedes fan, it was Monaco, because everything that could go wrong went wrong. It went wrong operationally, like you said, with the pit stops. It went wrong setup-wise for Hamilton. It went wrong in the race for Bottas. they got the strategy wrong. They let Perez and someone else cruise past them. I can't remember who. Vettel. And, no, it was three cars. It's very possibly three cars overcut him. That was everything that went wrong could go wrong. And it's interesting, though, that you would say Baku, because for me, Baku was it. Like, when I will never forget, I was watching the race, and we get the Sky feed here in South Africa, and Max had not been on camera much because he was cruising out in front. And I suddenly hear David Croft saying, "Oh no, what's happened to Max Verstappen?" And it's amazing how things slow down. I don't know if you know, when a disaster is happening, it feels like it's happening in slow motion. I'm sure between when Croft said that, what's happened to Max Verstappen, to them showing his car in the wall, that must have been 1.5 seconds. But it felt like forever. I heard him say it, and I remember thinking to myself, "Nah, he must be fine. Oh, maybe he's just had a little slip." I suddenly started thinking there was like a puddle on the road. It was a dry race, right? But like, I was like, oh, there's probably a puddle on the road and he slipped, or maybe he's flat spotted a tire, or, you know, you come up with all these crazy explanations and then you see the car on the wall. And I still remember thinking, oh, he can reverse it out of there. You know, like, like I was in such disbelief at suddenly out of nowhere with three laps to go, seeing this car on the wall, and then everything that I learned about what happened with the tires and the tire pressures and Pirelli. And I promise you, Pirelli, on this podcast, there's going to be one episode where I finally let it all out. But I will say this for now, Pirelli have blood on their hands and no one's holding them accountable. And it makes me furious, absolutely furious. But okay, that's fine.
Pirelli is on fraud watch, not only for Baku, which I don't really care about because, yeah, that race didn't happen in my opinion. But really also had blood on their hands. So Jeddah, what happened in Jeddah? No, it wasn't Jeddah, in Qatar.
Yep.
We need explanations on that. But we will dedicate an episode where it's just a Pirelli rant and we'll vent and we're just going to let all our frustrations out. Because if no one is going to hold them accountable, then DRS open will.
That's correct. We are basically the police of Formula One now, because the FIA can't police themselves. No one wants to police Pirelli. So who better than us?
You know, actually, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
But then in all of this, I think also need to like, also, what was your most monumental race? I think you mentioned, I think Mexico for you gave you hope. And that was the first race where you thought that Max could win this, right?
I think if you say the word monumental race, and you know, I have to take my emotion out of it. I think you've got to look at Monza. You've got to look at Monza and say it wasn't fantastic on the track. We saw the problems that everyone had from the sprint right through to the main race, but for the drama of the both world championship protagonists not getting a point, crashing on each other, that infamous imagery of one car on top of another. And, you know, thank God that
that's for Max's the halo tie on again. Top of, that's Max's tie on top of Lewis's head, by the way, guys. If you guys didn't know, Max's tie was on top of Lewis's head.
It was. And again, sincerely, thank God for the halo. But for a first McLaren win in nearly a decade, McLaren 1-2, the only 1-2 of the season, you know, one of the oldest and the second most successful team in the history of Formula One. Daniel Ricciardo's redemption at the time story. It felt like redemption at the time. It felt like it, but you know, let's give it. We're being nice people in 2022. We don't take jabs at drivers, even though I would love
absolutely
to.
Absolutely not. Not me. I'm not doing that. Y'all be say so.
Y'all be so. And maybe a bit of redemption for Valtteri. I mean, from the back of the grid to P3, I just think that it was, if I remove myself as a Red Bull fan, you look at that and you just, and if you think about the sport in general, that has to be it, probably. What do you think? Which race do you think, if you were a fan of the sport, you'd have just looked at it and thought, God, that's brilliant?
Brazil.
That's fair. Yeah.
I think it's changing my mind right now. You know, I was thinking that Sochi was probably like one of the most monumental races.
Ooh, but that's then a great shout. That's a great shout.
Yeah, but then I think Brazil, as a fan of the sport, stands out for me most compared to Sochi. I mean, Sochi was also like a monumental race, don't get me wrong, because that was when the record was broken, right? And we didn't, like, we also went into that race thinking that, okay, fine, we had a horrible quali, Mercedes had a horrible quali where they changed to intermediate, was it wet? Yeah, where they changed to wet tires pretty late. And no, it was soft, actually, which they changed to soft pretty late and they couldn't put like a banker lap both cars. And yeah, but then you look at the race and you look at how Lewis started fifth, and the very few first laps, you would think that, oh my God, he doesn't have this, you know, he doesn't have this, he's not going to do this. And then you look at the strategy where they basically baited like McLaren to pit early. And then after that, after McLaren pitting, Lewis was able to maintain P4, pitted, and then came back and then fought for P3, P2, and then he had to fight Lando Norris, who bottled the win. That was an easy win for him, but he made a silly mistake that I'm never going to let go of, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah, and then you look at how Lewis won that race. It was just really, really monumental. I mean, I also have to mention the fact that Max started last and then finished P2, but then, not really, wasn't really on merit. Then it is what it is.
Is this a New Year's resolution for you that you're going to try? You're going to try, like, from the bottom of your heart to just be like, you know what, Max? I enjoyed, I don't think our listeners know how much I enjoyed hearing that last like 5 seconds. It was fantastic.
It killed me. That's why I had to mention that it wasn't more on merit. That I had to say.
Oh man, they're gonna be doing this forever, guys. They're gonna be doing this forever, Red Bull, but it's fine. Yes?
I will never, ever just wake up one day and say that I'm going to give, like, Red Bull its flowers. Oh, my God. If I ever do that, just I'm dying, guys. That's how I will alert you guys when someone kidnaps me that, yeah, I'm in trouble.
No, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. And I was just thinking, maybe you can think about, perhaps, I don't know, something more lighthearted, the funniest moment of the season. And I just thought about this now, so I'm going to shoot and give you a few moments to think about it. But Sebastian Vettel going onto slicks at Turkey.
It's comfortably.
Yeah.
I think, okay, but Vettel had a lot of stinkers also when in Silverstone, where he just spun by himself, and I'm like, Batu, what's going on there? Like, how did he? Also, my funniest moment has to be when Checo asked for DRS from Max, and Max just put.
But Max was just like, no, sirree, I am not staying in your mess.
You know what was actually funny about that was that Checo was like, please ask Max to give me DRS. And then his engineer was like, no, said Checo. And then they didn't say anything to Max. Like, everything went on. Gary, like, he didn't ask for anything. I'm just like, oh my God, did that just happen? I think I still laugh about it even today. I'm going to rewatch Brazil tonight just for that. That was actually one of the funniest moments this season. And also, okay,
I can't fight you. Yeah.
That Sochi situation. I think the last laps of last season were just a mess. But yeah, that last few laps of Sochi where Lando was told to pit and he chose not to pit.
Oh, yeah, come on. Oh, come on. Like, how heartless are you right now? Everyone was just like, oh my gosh, like we were like in pain when we saw that happen. You found that funny?
Who was in pain?
Oh, come on. The kid.
That was self-inflicted. Let's be honest, guys. That was self-inflicted. He was warned 3 times. He was asked 3 times to come into the pit. And he was just like, shut up. I'm like, okay. Well, big man, you know, go on.
In his defense, and I do agree with you, but I would say in his defense, I think his team should have been more firm, and I think his team should have told him in no uncertain terms that Lando, the wet patch is behind you on the track. I don't think he realized that he was where he was driving and the grip that he had was probably okay, but he was going to come up to, you know, you do loops around a track, to a part of the track where you know, the rain was untenable, and his team should have just, they should have just overridden him.
He did not have any good. He was sliding on that track. He was sliding.
But no. But your goat, your goat also wanted to stay out. But his garage told him to come in, right? So there was grip there. Both of them were driving on more or less the same part of the track.
No, but I remember, yes, Lewis did not want to get into the pits, but also it has to do with a bit of experience. Like the experience that Lewis has knows that some days he's wrong and the team knows better than him. So I think it also had to play in that Turkey situation where I think in that moment Lewis remembered that in Turkey he was asked to pit and he didn't pit. He was asked to pit and he didn't pit for like I think 2 or 3 laps, and then which kind of cost him a podium. But I could be wrong because Turkey was also a blur to me because I was just pissed off. But then in terms of that Lando, they really should have been firm with him, but there was no way to speak to an engineer. I get that he was angry or like frustrated, whatever, but still, that was self-inflicted. Therefore, it makes it really, really funny. And whoever thought that it wasn't that on them, it was really funny. I laughed. I'm still laughing about it today.
That's fair. That's fair. And yeah, you're right. I think at Turkey, Hamilton basically tried to run the race on without stopping, because you're allowed to do that in race situations. And, you know, his garage had to tell him, dude, basically come in. But like, that's not important. I think we're on to the part that I actually want to really discuss and have a bit of a chat with you guys and everyone listening. Bome thought it was a good idea, and I think it is great that we just talk and we rate our best drivers. And right before we started recording, we shared each other's top 10 list. And I want to say straight up that we agree on 9 of the 10 drivers, which is pretty impressive. I think that's, you know, that's reasonable, and there's always space for disagreement. But I can't believe I'm about to say this, right? Actually, you know what? I'm going to call the names of the 9 drivers that we agree. We don't agree on the order everywhere, but we agree that these are 9 of the top 10 drivers of the season. We agree, Wame and myself, on Hamilton, Verstappen, Norris, Sainz, Gasly, Leclerc, Sergio Perez, Esteban Ocon, and George Russell. Those are the 9 drivers that we agree are the 10, are the top 10 drivers of the season. I'm going to call it one more time, and then I'm going to... Well, yeah, they're not. Yeah, we also have them in different orders. But yeah, those are the 9 of the top 10 that we agree. Hamilton, Verstappen, Norris, Sainz, Gasly, Leclerc, Perez, Ocon, Russell. Now, I'm going to start this, and Wame, you can then. So my 10th driver, who I consider in the top 10, and if you're interested, I had him as number 7. but he's in my top 10 and he's not in Wame's, is Fernando Alonso. I thought this was obvious, particularly after Silverstone. He's driven fantastically. His defense and his battle with Hamilton at Hungary was the best 10 or 15 laps of racing that we had the whole year. He was phenomenal, and he basically won that race for his teammate. His podium in Qatar was, again, in a car that had no right. We had, yes, Checo and Bottas. I'm making my case for why Fernando Alonso has to be in the top 10. And like I said, I had him 7th, right? So I didn't just have him in my top 10, but he was 7th. And you don't have him in your top 10. And so this is my case for Fernando Alonso. I think Qatar was just the pinnacle. His incredible drive during the sprint at Silverstone. He showed us, you know, he did start slowly. I think there were a lot of people who would have said, oof, has Alpine made the right call in bringing him back? Probably until Silverstone. And since then, he has shown us his class over and over again. I think he had a really good drive in Zandvoort too, although I stand corrected. I don't see how he could not be in a top 10 driver of the season, but he's not in yours. Tell us, Wame, who is, we agree on 9, who is the 10th driver in your top 10 of the season? And where did you rank him? Please tell my people.
First of all, I can't believe Lange does not have this person on his top 10. That is disrespectful to the driver and the team as well. But the reason I don't have Alonso on my list is I think that Alonso deserves to be in a retirement village, and that's that. And also, I don't have him there because he's done a lot of rookie mistakes. He's a 2-time world champion, but he wasn't showcasing that. The first half of the season, like he said, there's only like 2 races that stand out, which is Silverstone and Silverstone for you. What else? It was just Silverstone. And then you also mentioned Hungary, which was, yeah, Hungary was like the first part. Yeah, first part of the season was Silverstone and Hungary. Those are the only 2 races that he stands out in. And then we go into the second half. It's just, what's the other one that you mentioned? Zandvoort. I don't remember. I was just focusing on
Qatar.
Oh, yeah, and Qatar as well. But that's just 4 races of the 23 that we had.
He scored points consistently. Like, I was just, those are just highlights. I mean, I'm not going to put out his whole resume, but like, okay, you know what? Please carry on.
But the driver that I mentioned in my top 3 was Valtteri Bottas, and I ranked him 3rd. He deserved, because he even finished 3rd in the driver ratings. We can look it up. Valtteri is disrespected, and I think he's an amazing driver. He just has a lot of bad luck. And yeah, he just makes, I don't think it's mistakes, but yeah, it's just like teeny wincy decision, horrible decision making. And that's just that. And also with Bottas isn't a risk taker, because he knows, he's not much of a risk taker. Like, he'd rather finish the race than risk a DNF. Which is fair. You look at all his races, you see that when he approaches certain drivers, Max, to be specific, he doesn't even take any risks, because he knows that that's a lunatic and he's not trying to do that. But yeah, Bottas deserves top 3. He deserves, like, he really deserves it. You should look at his season, see how many DNFs he had, but he still managed to score points, make it up for it, and was on a lot of podiums. So I don't understand how he's not on your top 10 list. But then it's just being a hater. I get it. It's that Red Bull.
You know what? I think you make important arguments that he doesn't actually like make a lot of mistakes, even though we might want him to be more aggressive. I think his season was severely hampered by being used as Lewis Hamilton's engine guinea pig, right? And he had race penalties. It felt like, you heard me correctly. Yes. He was Lewis Hamilton's engine. He had six engines or ICEs at least. I don't know how many times he changed the whole power unit.
Mercedes had a reliability concern last season. It was not because he was...
It was only Bottas's car?
Yeah. Yes, fully.
So it was only Bottas's car. This is unbelievable. Lewis Hamilton survived the whole season on four power units, and Valtteri Bottas had to take six. Come on. And I think, if I remember correctly, he started at the back at Monza because he took a full power unit, if I remember the exact details.
Lewis only took
five places at Brazil because he only changed his ICE. He didn't change his MGUH. He didn't change his MGUK or any of those various components. And you're telling me that Bottas wasn't the guinea pig? Come on.
I said what I said.
No, but I think actually what we're getting at is that I'm actually supporting what you were saying, which is that there's a lot of obstacles that he has to overcome, which are not always his fault. We talked about his tire being changed in Monaco, his puncture in Qatar, which he had, although I think Mercedes were reckless in putting him out that long. There was no warning of the drop in tire pressure. So I do tend to agree with you that some of his work is overlooked. But there is absolutely no way in my mind that you could rank him above Lando Norris, who had a fantastic season, yes. And I ranked Lando Norris third, by the way. I think rank him eighth?
Let's do this, right? Let's start our rankings before, and then we can make a case for each driver.
Okay, so, all right, yeah.
My number 10 is George Russell. And for those people that follow me on Twitter, you guys should understand that this was also a very hard decision to make. Like, I died while saying this and typing this, mostly because I have an agenda against him. But that's neither here nor there. I ranked him 10th because he was very consistent in his quali pace. Like, his quali runs was very consistent. He made Q2 in almost half of his races last season. That's the reason why he's 10th. But also his race pace was a bit suspect under the light. But yeah, he's 10th for me. What's your
And he was 10th for me. I think he was 10th for me as well. I think he qualified really well, and he got some very, very good points. Listen, Spa is the shambles that it was, but he got the points in the classification. That quali lap that he put together at Spa, you know, whilst it was P2, was quite phenomenal. He was fighting for points before his crash with Bottas at Imola, and he collected some big points for Williams in several other races. So yeah, he's obviously got the reputation for being Mr. Saturday, but he started to show that he can put his race craft together. So yeah, we're in total agreement there.
Number 10 is George Russell, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Number nine for me is Esteban Ocon, because he's a race winner and he's also a bit consistent, if we're being honest. So that he's a bit overlooked because of, I don't know, actually, guys, like, Ocon for me is number nine because of his race win and he's driving in Qatar. Because he found himself in P2 during the race. So yeah, that's why he's ninth for me. I can't really make a case for him. He's just ninth.
Yeah, I think you meant Saudi, his battle with Bottas there at the end of the season. You know, he was a whisker away from a genuine podium in a car, again, that had no right to be on the podium. His win at Hungary was fantastic. And I think one of the underlooked things about that win was that he didn't put a single foot wrong the whole race. I mean, Sebastian Vettel was on his gearbox and many of us were sat there thinking, got a four-time world champion, in a at the time we thought might still be a decent Aston Martin against a young rookie in a car that, again, the Alpine only really started to come alive around Silverstone time. So that was the race before. And, you know, he showed an experience that belied he's still quite young, and, you know, he put in some really consistent performances. I think Alpine have a low key, they're a dark horse. I'm not saying they're going to win the championship this year, but if they're doing the right things behind the scenes, that driver lineup and what, then something might happen there. So, you know, I have nothing but praise for Esteban Ocon. And I say this as someone who has been a huge Ocon hater, particularly since Brazil 2018. And those who remember will remember what I'm talking about.
Oh, that's neither here nor there. You know what? but yeah, so we agree that he's ninth.
Yes, we actually, yeah, we do agree, yeah.
Okay.
Who did you have eighth?
Perez.
And again, we're in agreement. We actually, you know, we're not... We sound like we disagree about a lot, but low key, we're together. Checo, you know, who's now been dubbed at Red Bull as the Minister of Defense. You know, he got his race win. He's the first Red Bull driver to not since Daniel Ricciardo, who is not Max Verstappen, to win a race. And he could really have won Baku on pure pace. He had a slightly slower stop than Max, which. Meant
Wait,
that he didn't
no.
overcut him.
No.
Yes.
My number eight isn't Checo, actually. Checo is a bit higher than that. He's just one place higher than that.
Oh, okay. All right. But I guess let's talk about him, whether he's seven for you and eight for me. But and he did, his season fell away in the middle. And he had some really, really atrocious races. I was saying on our season review episode that I think the two worst performances of the season came from both Red Bull drivers. I think the number one worst performance of the season was Max at Saudi, despite the fact that he finished P2. We've spoken at length about his driving standards that day. But I think second was Checo. And I can't remember whether it was Austria or Styria, where he was all over the place trying to run around the outside of the McLarens first, and then he got into big tussles with Ferraris. If I remember correctly, he might have got three different time penalties that day. It was just unacceptable. And he, to his credit, didn't allow the season to get away from him, and he was still able to put in some stellar performances. And ultimately, I think there's two ways to be a teammate. You can be the Bottas way, which is the consistent and reliable. Perez wasn't that. But Perez, when he had to, he pitched. One of the sad things that we don't talk about at Abu Dhabi, because we don't talk about Abu Dhabi now, is his defense on his first stint on Lewis Hamilton, where he was able to allow Max a 7-second delta. Max went from being more than 8 seconds behind Lewis to nearly in his DRS because of a stellar job that Checo had done. And Checo had done something similar at Turkey. So he's got those standout performances in him. And if he is a bit more consistent next year, he'll, number one, win more races, but number two, improve from a ranking of seventh or eighth, I think.
I think that Checo is overrated. And
I don't think he's going to be a world champion, but yeah, I think he's good enough.
I think he's overrated because he makes a lot of mistakes, number one, right? We can say that, we can argue that his car wasn't given the same upgrades as Max's, whatever, but he didn't show up when it was necessary, and Checo is the only teammate that is allowed by F1 fan bases to get away with the things that he got away with. I mean, you can't qualify, your teammate can't put a car on pole and then you put yours fifth or sixth or seventh. You know, sometimes he didn't even make Q2 and he's in a Red Bull. Do you understand? Like, how do you not make Q2 when you're in a Red Bull?
I agree. I fully agree. there's some valid criticisms. And it's just, I guess for me, I was balancing up the very low lows. And like you said, you know, not qualifying for Q3, even at Zandvoort, at a circuit where the Red Bull literally won, versus stellar performances like Baku, United States, where he literally had no water. I don't think people understand how bad that was and how Herculean that effort is to, you know, just not faint and retire. So it is a mixed season, but on balance, in the key moments of the season for Red Bull, he was able to be there. That's why he finishes eighth. And also some other guys were absolute rubbish, like Nikita Mazepin, you know. So like, he's not going to finish below Mazepin.
But Lange's number eighth is Perez. Mine is Norris.
It's Perez, yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised you have him so low.
Because he basically wasn't there for the second half of the season.
My response to that, and I had Norris third, guys, so this is our first like big discrepancy, is that I think he drove really well in the second half of the season. He had incredible bad luck. How many punctures? I can think of punctures. Was it at Qatar? Did he have a puncture at Saudi? I might just be making things up now, but I
You're
feel like a lot of there are a lot of things that happened for Norris towards the end of the season that didn't go his way, that were out of his control. And I think it's easy to forget just how incredible he was in the first half of the season.
We can give him that. We can say that in the first half of the season, he was consistent, you know, and everything like that, which is fine. But then I think more than anything, for everyone, for every driver, the second half is the one that kind of matters, that stands out for all of us, really. As an F1 fan, the second half of the season is the most important, really, because that's where you're scoring points and you're basically making a name for yourself. Not a name for yourself. I mean, you're making, you could say that you're making a name for yourself because you have to secure your position or score higher points just so that you can finish part of the top 10. And Norris in the second half of the season was basically not there. I can't even remember the drives that he had. He bottled two race wins because Monza was also supposed to be his, and he was expecting he was begging for team orders at that time. Like, he was begging for them when he could have just overtook Daniel Ricciardo on pure pace, but he didn't do that. So he bottled that win as well.
I asked to see, whoa, you don't just overtake your team. Are you, you're basically Sebastian Vettel and Red Bull now. You basically want another multi 2-1 situation. You just want to like disregard your team. And, you know, I mean, imagine he had tried a move in Ricciardo and they'd crashed. Imagine. You know how tough it was at Monza to overtake anyway. I think that's why we maybe rated him a bit differently. I think he was told to stay behind. He was clearly the faster car. But McLaren, rightfully so, didn't want to jeopardize their 1-2.
I guess, but he's still 8 for me.
No, that's fine. I mean, of course, we don't have to necessarily come to a consensus. So that's up to 7th. Who did you have as 6th?
Gasly. Because he's the most consistent of the new generation.
Yes. He just doesn't have blistering pace. He's not blisteringly quick. He doesn't have that race where you think to yourself, wow. I don't know. Does he have blistering pace? Maybe he does some way. Some people seem to think so, but I don't think so.
Okay, to be honest, with Gasly, I think more than anything, he can be consistent in terms of like quali and driving, but he also doesn't have defense skills. Just like Lando, they can't defend to save their lives. They just like, as soon as they see someone behind them, they just let them pass by.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. You had Gasly 6th and then Leclerc 5th, but I had Gasly 5th and Leclerc 6th. So again, we're not too far apart. And I think the only real reason that I had them the other way around is that Leclerc being beaten by his teammate when he was supposed to be the number one driver.
But that's not fair.
That's not fair. What? That he was beaten by his teammate who was in the Ferrari for the first year and he's the number one driver.
No. Leclerc has a lot of bad luck. If we can talk bad luck on the grid, Leclerc's number one, Bottas is number two, and Russell is number three. But Leclerc has a lot of bad luck.
He did. And, you know, so I don't know which side of the coin you lie on, but, you know, he threw his car into the wall at Monaco after putting it on pole. but Ferrari should have picked up the issues and he should have just taken a grid penalty, which I think would have been about five places, and raced. You know, he could have still got some good points home. Instead, they tried to do everything that they could, were reckless, and the car didn't race at all. Okay. It's easy to forget that he also put it on pole in Baku, right? And Monaco was actually his second consecutive pole in a Ferrari that clearly was, especially at that time, struggling. So he had a lot of highlights. I just on the balance of being beaten by his teammate. But I think, again, we're not far apart. You had him fifth, I had him sixth, and I had Gasly fifth, you know.
Do you know why I also had Leclerc fifth? Because before we can get to like my top four or whatever, Leclerc's Silverstone drive is one of the most underrated drives. Of the most underrated drives ever.
Yes.
That car had no business being at the front row to start with. It was after the crash, he put it like first, like he avoided the crash with like Lewis and Max, cruised his way there, had red flagged it, and then he was basically leading that race with engine cuts for 50 laps. He was literally outpacing a Mercedes. Well, not really outpacing, I don't think outpacing is the right word, but yeah, he was maintaining that lead in the car that literally had engine cuts, I think twice or three times during the race.
I couldn't agree more. Your sentiment about how exceptional that drive is from Leclerc is missed by a lot of people, especially in the emotion of Hamilton actually winning the race at the end. And it was a bit overshadowed by the events post-race and also, of course, the crash that Hamilton and Verstappen had. But I think this will really come down to, you know, two different types of Formula One fans. And you either the type of guy who values or the fan who values consistency. But there are other fans who, and I think most of us maybe fall into this category, we want to be swept off our feet. And Leclerc is able to produce those moments of magic, those moments where you ask yourself, how has he done that? And Silverstone was that. As opposed to Carlos Sainz, who is just Carlos Sainz doesn't have that drive where you think to yourself, jeez, mate, like, how did you do that? But he's just serially consistent. I think he scored points, or he finished, maybe not points, but he finished 20 of 22 races or something like that, Carlos Sainz. I think it might even be points. He is fiercely, fiercely consistent, but that's a very different thing. And as people, we're drawn to different aspects, as
I think also, not that one is right or wrong. I think with Carlos Sainz is that he doesn't have star power. Like, you don't look at him and you think, oh my God, that's the face of F1. Like, you see him and you're like, okay, he's consistent, but there's nothing that screams, look at me. And yeah, like you said, his drives aren't anything exceptional, but he's just very consistent.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, absolutely. But I think that's it. That's the number four. We agree on number four, isn't it? I mean, again, it should not be underestimated how impressive it is to win or to beat your teammate. Not just beat your teammate, as we've seen how difficult that is for newcomers this season, but to beat a teammate who everyone pretty much thinks is a guaranteed, or as close to guaranteed, Formula One world champion in the future. And I find it interesting that Carlos Sainz, slapped up Lando Norris for 2 years in a row at McLaren, and everyone seems to be in consensus that Lando is a quote-unquote future world champion. But somehow, despite beating these... Yeah, I know. I know, not you, clearly. Clearly, we had him eighth, but, you know... Despite everyone, most people agreeing that Lando and Leclerc are championship winning quality for the future, people don't seem to think that Sainz is, despite the fact that he's beaten them now for the past 3 years.
You know, I had a very interesting question that I asked the timeline today, which people didn't answer. I think you missed it as well. But I was like, was Lando really good this season, or was he against a washed up Ricciardo?
Bit of both. I think, I mean, again, I'm going to use your goat. Your goat in Austria, what did he say about him? He said, geez, that kid can drive. And we've not heard Lewis Hamilton. What did he, what did he say?
Lewis passed Lando and he's like, oh, Lando, such a good driver, Lando. That's it. Didn't say anything exceptional. I said, good driver. Let's not exaggerate it, ne? Let's
keep going. Hi. What are you talking about? He was...
I can even look it up right now and tell you the exact word for word.
Okay. But how many people has Lewis ever said that about whilst he's in the pilot seat? I think... Yeah, okay, fair enough. Whatever about Lando. But I do think the truth is, with most things, is in the middle. I do feel that this was a big season for his development, and he'll continue in that way. I think he now believes that he deserves to be amongst the front drivers. And if the McLaren, you know... I think most people think that the order will be more or less the same, and I tend to agree. Perhaps Ferrari can get in there, or McLaren. But if the McLaren has made enough gains, and they will have a Mercedes engine, and it'll be the first time that they're building the car to fit the Mercedes engine, you know, Lando Norris is going to say to himself, if ever there was a time to win a world championship, it's on the bang of big regulation changes. We saw it with Jenson Button, Sebastian Vettel, after Braun sort of fell away. It's not impossible that kid, I think he's got what it takes.
I don't think so, but that's just me and my little agenda against him. But yeah, so Lando...
That's fine.
Lando's Langer's number three, and my number three spot is... I don't know if he wants to change that or what.
No, I don't. I think, I mean, first of all, I'm not adding Bottas to this list, but, you know, we could maybe play around with the order a bit, but I think I'm quite happy. And, our top two, do you want to take it away? Because obviously we're left with Hamilton and Verstappen. And let me tell you guys,
Langen, I agree, 100% agree on our top two. So Langen's top two, guys, I don't know how he got there, and he will tell you, but Langen's top two is Max Verstappen, and my top two is Max as well, my P2 is Max, and the number one, we all collectively agree that Lewis Hamilton really is the best driver that Formula One has ever seen. And last season also proved that.
Yeah, no. Okay, I'm in full on, let me put my Red Bull jacket back on. I'm back in full on defense mode here. But I believe that Max is probably quicker. When it just comes down to it, I think he's probably quicker than Lewis. But Lewis is a better driver. And you know, outright speed is not the only metric of what makes a great driver. And it is for that reason that I had Hamilton ahead of Verstappen. I think Verstappen's lows, and I'm going to say things that sound contradictory, because Max Verstappen finished first or second I believe, in 19 races out of 22. That's extraordinary. He never once finished third. And the only race that, and the only race that he finished, where he didn't finish in the top two, was Hungary, which was a stellar effort on its own because he basically had no barge board. He was basically driving something worse than a Haas, and he managed to bring points home. I think in the context of this season, I've mentioned Saudi Arabia. And whilst Lewis had Monaco as a disaster class weekend, I think that in terms of driving stuff, I think you do. We give Lewis praise for getting the setup right, particularly at Qatar. And I think he should take the heat when he doesn't.
No,
collaborative effort at Monaco too. But okay, let me just finish this, wrap up this point, and then I'll let you make the point that you want to make. But fair. I just feel like Verstappen had his low moments were much lower than Hamilton's, and that's really what it came down to. I think that Hamilton broke him mentally, and I don't mean that in some aggressive whatever. I think that Verstappen was shattered. I think that he is a much better driver than he showed, particularly at Saudi, and even with the start at Abu Dhabi. And I think that Lewis just grinds him down. You know, the whole thing about the Lewis of the second half of the season. And, you know, with drives like Mexico, which we talked about earlier, when Hamilton put it on P2, despite all the adversity that he was facing, I think that on net balance, and it is very, very close, that Hamilton was the best driver of the season.
Okay, before I get to making my case for Lewis, which I don't think I need to in terms of like him being P1, but Lewis's setup for Monaco I think he hadn't started setting up the car yet, because it was like what, race 4 of the season, so he hadn't actually gotten to grips with that temperamental car that we call the W12, which was very, very temperamental. But yeah, that's why I'm saying that it wasn't his fault, because I remember James Vowles also took the heat and for that, because no, he didn't take the heat for that. But during the race debriefs that Mercedes always puts out every Wednesday after a race weekend, they did mention that Lewis had nothing to do with that setup. So it wasn't his fault. Please, let's just get that correctly. In terms of like P2, why Max is P2 for me, I mean, he's P2. I mean, yeah, guys, Max is P2. I can't say much. You can't say much. Hey? Yeah, he's just P2.
I would just say that, like, you know, some of it is banter. Sometimes I'm not even sure if it is just banter, but I think a lot of people have lost sight of just how far ahead Hamilton and Verstappen are from the rest of the field. It was Qatar, where they were dropping 30 seconds on the field. We did speak about Perez's drinks issue, but I think they won by 40 seconds. You know, there was 30 to 40 seconds between P2 and P3 in the United States. These two pushed each other to exceptional standards and to an exceptional level. And I think, you know, the context of who's the better driver between of them, it should not be lost that they are miles better than everyone else. Miles better.
Okay, listen, I can give them that. That's fine, really. That's perfect. We can say that. Lange said it, that's why he's P2. That's all. But then in terms of like who's the better driver, I think like you said, when it comes to like championships, especially what makes a championship isn't just the pace that they have. It's also like the all round, like it's just a package, really. You can't just have pace. You have to have also the mental strength. You also have to have like to be a team player. You also have to be very involved in your car and what you get out of it. So yes, when it comes to the better driver, we have to, it's not even a debate at this point. It's just Lewis. So, guys, P1 is Lewis. P2 is Max. P3 is no one's agreeing on that. And yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's all we care about. Well, you know what? Because you had Bottas third and I had Norris third, but like Bottas wasn't in my top 10 and Norris was eighth, we can put Sainz on the podium because we at least agreed on him as fourth. Hamilton, Verstappen, Sainz.
That's a bit of a reach. No.
I will say, but who else? Okay? Who else?
Let's just leave it like that. It's fine. Yours can be, you can have Alonso on your list and then I'll have my list. And then maybe when we get feedback from everyone else, they can tell us, when we get feedback from our listeners, they can tell us which list they think is more correct, which list they think is more accurate. How about that?
It's definitely mine. I don't think it's definitely mine, but, you know, it's fine.
Girl, I mean, I guess.
But, you know, we did start off chatting about how difficult and perhaps depressing the race started, but the sport is going to carry on, you know. And I don't mean that in a flippant way. I mean that 2022 on the 18th of March or the 20th, I can't remember, the lights are going to go out at Bahrain. Are you able to, at this stage, and I'm asking sincerely, are you able to start to look forward to 2022? Is there anything that you're looking forward to? Or are you still sort of, you know, you want the FIA report and to wrap up 2021?
I want the FIA report released. And then the only thing that I think might be, that I might be looking forward to is just seeing Lewis drive that car. So if he chooses not to come back, I'm sorry, I'm not looking to 2022. I will watch as a casual when I remember. I'm kidding, guys. As much as I hate to love the sport, it is a great sport and I will watch it. But I'm not looking forward to much because I don't know Lewis's future. So that's what's making me a bit, you know, apprehensive when it comes to like looking forward to 2022. I mean, the new cars also are a bit exciting. I mean, we all want to see the new cars and we want to see which team is the regulations and whatever. But I can't fully get myself into like that mental space because I don't know Lewis's future in the sport. That's just basically it. What are you looking forward to?
No, and you're right. I mean, I really do hope. I do hope that he comes back. Which is not the same thing. He doesn't owe us anything. When you watch greatness, I'm a big tennis fan as well. And Rafael Nadal, there's certain sections of tennis twit. I've called it tennis twit now. Like I've just made that up now, and that's what we're calling it going forward. Who starting to grumble that maybe Nadal is, you know, a little bit past it, whatever that is supposed to mean. And besides the fact that I disagree with him, I think that there's something beautiful in watching greats do what they do what they love, and excel at it, and to leave on his own terms. Now, I think, don't get me wrong, if Hamilton leaves now, it will be very much his own decision. But it's kind of disheartening when you know that 5 weeks ago, him leaving the sport had probably not even crossed his mind because he had signed this contract for 2 years. So I'm trying to suggest that, you know, I want to see him leave when he wants to leave.
On his own merit, yeah.
Yeah. I can't find the right words, and I hope that I make the sentiment. And please don't quote me as saying, you know, if he leaves now, it's not his own terms. It is his own terms, but it's not something that he would have, you know, been planning. And it's not the way that you want a legend of the sport to leave. So that's the first thing, and I really want him to do that. And I'm looking forward to potentially some closer racing. I'm not convinced the cars are going to do it, but I don't know anything about physics. And, you know, I'm looking forward to being a bit more relaxed. Like I said, there was something, I tweeted it a number of times, there was something quite emotionally draining about last season, and this is before Abu Dhabi. I said to you a number of times, even by the time we got to United States, I'm tired. I was just tired of the season. And again, I think for me, as someone who didn't have emotional investment in the World Championship up until last year, it was nice. It was fun. I kind of think Red Bull will certainly be fighting for podiums, but maybe not the championship next year. I've got my own reasons for that. So I kind of just look forward to enjoying the sport for what it is. No, I really don't mind. I really don't care, because that's how I've watched the sport for so long. And it will just allow me to be a lot more pleasant on race day. So, you know, then they can start fighting again there, 23, 24, whatever the case may be. And I look forward to enjoying the season with a lot less emotional baggage. I really, really do.
You know what I might also be looking forward to? I might also be looking forward to seeing number 16 drive. I think Ferrari is going to make him a car that's worth race wins and everything. So I might be looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, I think if Ferrari, and I mean, we saw that engine at the end of last season, it's made huge gains. If that Ferrari decides that it wants to be a world championship winning car, and that goes for both the constructors and the drivers' championship, oh, that would be tasty. I think there is a romance in Ferrari being at the front of the grid for Formula One. Excuse me, got a frog in my throat. That, you know, it's like when Brazil dominate world football, or, you know, you want the West Indies and cricket to sort of ascend back to the top of the game. There's something beautiful about Ferrari, you know, fighting for wins. And it would be great to see. I wouldn't begrudge them. I like both their drivers. I think they've got a good team. I slandered them a lot, especially in 2020, but they got their heads down, got down to business, and they look like they're putting together a very, very cool operation.
Couldn't have said it any better. But yeah, I think we might be, like, people keep saying that maybe the field next year will be like equal in a way, but I don't think that's the case. I think more than anything, Mercedes will be up there, and yeah, Ferrari between Ferrari and Red Bull, those are literally going to be the top three, and the rest of the fields are just going to be like that, because judging from also the reports that we're seeing on the timeline, from journalists about like how testing is going, not testing, how these cars are going, pre-season testing, whatever is going. McLaren isn't giving us any hope. Aston Martin might be giving us hope, but then there's also Aston Martin, because all they've done these years is just copy and paste and just plagiarism, really. I mean, yeah, so I think the top three teams are just going to be Red Bull. What did I start with? Red Bull. Ew. It's going to be Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull.
One day I'm going to catch you slipping. I'm going to catch you slipping in Red Bull, something about Red Bull, and you're going to praise them. And I'm going to make sure that, like, I put it everywhere on social media.
Yeah, that's not going to happen, but good luck.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't know. Yeah.
I was saying that you and I could go on and on and on and on and talk about Formula One, but I think the funniest thing that we're doing right now is that when we dropped our last episode, I remember us saying that by January we'll be going out and actually having fun, and we wouldn't be discussing F1 anymore. And look at us.
It's quite terrifying, and I hope that because there's chaos with the testing, then they're not going to show testing on TV, etc., etc. And or Barcelona testing they won't show, but then Bahrain they will. I hope that having this conversation can bring closure. I hope that for a lot of the people who are listening, that we can close the chapter that is the 2021 season, which again doesn't mean that we're not going to hold the FIA and the various stakeholders in Formula One accountable for the things that they do and the things that they don't do. It just means that we are able to make peace. But again, I don't want to sound like a hypocrite or contradictory. Take your time. Take your time wherever you are. The way that you feel is valid. It's important. And you have every right to go through and process this in the way that you see fit.
Yeah. I also just want to send a message to Team LH, and I hope everyone's doing okay given the circumstances, and that we will be okay. And I also hope that Lewis Hamilton, wherever he is having a relaxed holiday or break. And if he does come back, he comes back to us someday, not stronger, but just happier, you know, and okay. I just really want Lewis to be okay. And with that being said, we'll see you guys on the next episode, which will probably drop after the car revealed, after teams reveal their car liveries. And yeah, right?
I'm always here. I'm available. Yeah, I think we've closed the 2021 chapter by starting a conversation in 2022. And I hope that you guys have enjoyed it. I hope that we were able to be lighthearted and share a few good moments to remember that the sport is has given so many of us so much joy. And I hope that it will continue to do that. And we really, really look forward to having you on the ride for 2022. I think there's some really, really cool stuff that we hope to be able to do. And yeah, I mean, like I said, it's January. It's nighttime. I don't even know what day of the week it is. And we're talking about Formula One. I think it's enough now. It's enough. Let me go torture myself with that chaotic football club I support called Manchester United.
But yeah, I'll see you guys on the next episode. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe.
Oh yeah, that's right. We've got all the details in the comments. But thank you for listening. And if you've come this far, you're a hero. Ciao, guys.
Bye, guys.